Hello, I'm Lyndall Scoble from Cape York Natural Resource Management. For the past couple of years, we've been making the My Cape York Life podcast, sharing stories of people who live on and care for Cape York Peninsula. This is the second of two bonus episodes in Series 2 of My Cape York Life, telling the story of how Cape York NRM began and the life story of its founding CEO, Bob Fraser. Bob retired in April 2018 after 8 years in the role. He helped establish Cape York NRM as the region's first natural resource management body and helped it grow from its early days to the highly regarded regional NRM that it is today. Bob has had many achievements and adventures in his lifetime of community service. He's a thoroughly respected leader and a thoroughly lovely bloke. I sat down for a yarn with Bob at his home at Lake Tinaroo a few days before he retired. His place is central to the Cape York NRM story. Its earliest meetings were held here, and Bob recalls writing the constitution on his veranda. In part one of Bob's story, we left him serving as CEO of another successful NRM body, now called NQ Dry Tropics, a role that involved a lot of commuting between Townsville and the Burdekin. Bob and his wife Vanelle had a dream of moving to the Atherton Tablelands, possibly in retirement, but an unexpected opportunity made the move possible. Bob Fraser takes up the story.
For 5 years I've been travelling back and forwards when I wasn't travelling the other direction between Eyre and Townsville for work. You know, I'd leave fairly early in the morning, get home fairly late at night, for those years. And kind of, it was early 2010, Vanelle and I said, well, really, you know, how about we actually rent a house in Townsville and just close up here, you know, for 6 months, take a bit of the pressure off. And we had children in Townsville at the time as well. So it seemed a pretty good idea, and we'd been up there for a month or two. So that was, or probably about 3 months. And Vanelle said to me, well, kind of the house is sitting there in the Burdekin, and we want to go to the Tableland. Why don't we think about having a look up on the Tableland? Maybe we could sell the house in the Burdekin and, you know, buy something in the Tableland for a time. We go up there for holidays and whatever. Yeah, so she got online.
Perfect plan.
Yeah, and had my full support. There was no arguing, and it was a great idea. Vanelle hopped online and found three houses that she thought were worth having a look at. So Easter 2010, we came up and went round with a real estate agent and fell in love with the place where we're standing now.
Yeah. And I can see why.
Yeah. And so we kind of, pretty well on the spot, signed a contract for 3 months subject to the sale of the house in Townsville. Mm-hmm. The young couple had built this house and it was 18 months old. They'd built it, and he was working a surveyor on the mine, mm-hmm. in the mines, and they'd bought a block of land down at Port Hinchinbrook and wanted to build there. Yeah, that was just before the cyclone. Mm-hmm. They'd been trying to sell. So anyway, they said, yeah, okay, take it on. I think it took about a week to sell the house in Eyre.
Wow.
And it shocked us too.
Yeah.
And I think shocked them even more, because all of a sudden they realised they had to pack up and move and make arrangements and whatever.
Yeah.
So basically, I think it was the end of May at the settlement, and it would have been at the end of May the ad went out for someone to put their hand up to set up regional body for Cape York.
Ah, yeah. So it's all like perfect timing. It was all meant to be.
I
think it was all meant to be. It's just the whole finding this place, selling your house so quickly, that's pretty incredible.
I guess that's been the story of my life, really.
Yeah.
What's meant to happen happens. Yeah. So I was aware that there'd been two previous attempts to set up the regional body that had failed for one reason or another, and so there was a bit of risk involved. Anyway, I put my hand up and I came up and for the interview. Yeah, it was quite interesting. Joseph Elu, who was the chair, and Bob Sullivan, yep. from CYSF, living in Cooktown. Bob Spears, who was at that time heading up the NRM programs for the state. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Dine, who was the RLO for the federal government, mm-hmm. Out of Canberra, interview panel. And the task that they gave me was to do a presentation on how I would go about setting up the regional body and my work plan for the first 12 months. And so I came up and I did this presentation, I think it was about midday when I finished that. And about 2 o'clock, I got a call, asked me if I'd accept the position.
Just like that?
Yeah. Andrew Drysdale was in the room. He wasn't part of the panel, but Andrew Drysdale, he rang me as well. Mm. How that the third attempt came about, and that's probably a really important thing to recognise, was that people in Cape York were missing out, not having a regional body. There wasn't an accepted NRM plan. There'd been an attempt to write one. It wasn't endorsed by either the community or the federal or state government. So the NRM plan process hadn't delivered what was needed. So I was CEO at NQ Dry Tropics then, and I used to go out to Northern Gulf to their AGMs as a guest, you know, and do a bit of presentation on what we were doing. So at this meeting was a fellow called John Geese and another one called Ian Adcock. Mm-hmm. And there was Bob Miles and Hilton Taylor were the state and federal reps there. After the AGM, there was this bit of a huddle, and I was invited by Andrew Drysdale was there as well. I was invited to come over and just sit in. And Ian Adcock and John Geese presented a plan about how to set up a regional body on Cape York.
Oh, yeah.
Here's how it should be done.
Yep.
Here's how you would consult. You know, and it was about setting up a steering committee. And the federal and state governments bought the idea and funded the steering committee. And Emma Jackson, David Claudy, Bob Sullivan, Joseph Elu, people like that were on that steering committee.
So these are all, the people that you're talking about, Bob, are all Cape York identities, really. They're people who have been really involved in natural resource management across a variety of sectors on Cape York, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. So you couldn't have got a better crew. It was really well mixed. People from communities, people off from Cooktown, from communities, people off country like David off the Indigenous Protected Area. There was a really good mix. There were graziers, like Emma represented some of the grazing industry. There were farmers, Peter Inderbitson, people like that.
Yeah.
And so there was a really good cross-section. So that was the plan that Ian and John put forward, about this is how you would do it. Mm. So the steering committee was set up, and a wonderful lady called Olwen Crimp, who was with EHP and had a lot of involvement with the Cape over the time, she actually was engaged as a consultant to actually run the process. Mm. And the steering committee was actually that supported that process and participated in it. And they travelled all around the Cape for many months, having meetings all over the Cape. And so the community actually came up with a robust plan and actually set up the design of the organisation, what its focus should be, that it should deliver through partnerships, a whole lot. And the organisation has stayed true to that wherever possible. Things have grown, things have changed, but it's certainly maintained that approach from the original steering committee.
So why do you think, Bob, that it was so hard to get this up and running for such a long time? What were the contributing factors to it failing twice before?
The complex politics on Cape York, really, and beyond, federal, state and local politics. Yeah, so that has been one of the big challenges over the 8 years I've been in the job, working a middle road between the people and actually working with everyone, being willing to work with everyone, and being apolitical. Mm. That's been very important. Mm. So, very interesting. So, come back to the actual offer. I went back and I hadn't told the chair of NQ Dry Tropics that I was applying for the job. So I rang him up on the way back from Cairns and I said to the chair, I said, can I come and see you? He said, oh, okay. Because I used to call and see him fairly often. I'd just call in. Yeah. But I rang him. I turned up there and I told him that I'd been offered the job and I was going to accept it. And I said, I'd like to give you a month's notice. He said, well, why wait a month?
Oh.
So he said, you can go. So basically, I didn't feel bad about that because Scott Crawford, who was operations manager a couple of years, had been working on a succession plan with him. And he stepped into the role just only acting while they did the recruitment, and he ended up being the CEO there. But so that allowed me to virtually just kind of pack up and come up. So 2 weeks after the interview, I was actually here. We were living in this house, And the week after, I started work for Cape York NRM and hopped in a borrowed vehicle, which loaned to me by Sustainable Futures, and drove to Weipa, picked up John Geese on the way, and drove to Weipa for the first board meeting of the organisation.
And the rest is history.
The rest is,
But there's a lot of history in there as well. You were the first and the only person employed by the organisation for some time, and you've had a dual role as CEO and company secretary for the time you've been there as well. Yep. So can you tell us a little bit about the growth of the company and how that happened and what it looked like along the way?
Yeah. Okay, so for the first 12 months, it was just me. And I mentioned this was the registered office here at home. Mm-hmm. Then had an opportunity to join Terrain in their accommodation. And that move, while I was actually doing that, moved from Yungaburra to the CSIRO complex in Atherton. Mm-hmm. We actually didn't have any money for the first 12 months. Mm-hmm. The regional groups collective held the funding for the organisation. And I think it was $250,000 for the first year to do everything to set up the company.
Yeah, right.
And that was to support the board. And we had very regular meetings during that, mm-hmm. The travel and the whole lot. So at the end of the first 12 months, the federal and state government said, OK, we're happy how it's going. We will now fund you. So from the 2011-12 year was the first actual funding that came to Cape York NRM. So at that point in time, I needed a bit of administration assistance. So Baron Catchment Care had a lady there working part-time, and so she actually then came and did some admin and support part-time for me. Yeah. And it grew from there. And Peter Marie got to stage we need some technical and on-ground work being done, because we had some money flowing and had projects and had to design projects. Yeah. So Peter Marie came on as operations manager. I think that wasn't the title then, but yeah, it was probably project officer or something.
Yeah.
We've had a wonderful stability in staff over those 8 years. You came on board there a year or so later, and it's moved on. So the challenge has been, originally when the regional body was set up, the federal and state government used to give $500,000 between them to each regional body in Australia to cover all the core operating costs, which is the board, the CEO, admin, finance, audits, insurance, all that type of thing. So after the first couple of years, they stopped funding that and it became a percentage of the total amount for your grants. Mm. The other thing is that with the delivery through partnerships, we've been most successful organisation, NRM organisation Australia, I believe, in actually doing that. Originally, we were up around the 75-80% of all the funding coming in, went out to our partners for delivery on the ground. But then as it's grown, we've had a lot of technical projects, like the writing of the water quality improvement plan for Cape York, gully remediation, reef, and a lot of other activities that actually need technical expertise that wasn't available in the Cape. So we've done a lot of capacity building, both at the governance level for whether it be land trusts and small organisations. There's not enough work for them to be able to actually employ a technical expert.
Mm.
So we've had to employ some technical people. The other thing, with the adoption of information technology, it's been really important for us to move with that and support our delivery partners with technology. And we've taken on a person who has great skills in that area. Those sorts of things, we've had to employ people ourselves. GIS systems, geographic information systems, things like that.
Mm.
Government's expectations are that we will map all our activity and provide that the locations in mapping and all those sorts of things show where we're working and things like that.
I guess that is one of the big challenges as an organisation grows. As you grow, that means that there's more funding coming in, there's all of that administration and financial and reporting and all of those things which need to be supported as you're going along. And then you're still getting all of this money out to the ground, which also needs to be administered as well. So you've got that two-way administration.
Yeah. In NQ Dry Tropics, the delivery was predominantly through staff, but it was through two graziers and cane farmers and veggie farmers. Up here on Cape York, the staff have to be able to engage and build relationships and maintain relationships and understand the different cultures So the grazing industry on Cape York has a culture. Our traditional owners have different cultures across the Cape. Our farmers have a different approach to land management. So it actually requires a different set of skills or a second set of skills if you're, say, an extension officer. Yeah, it requires those skills on top of what you would normally expect. Yeah. So I think this has been critical in... We've been very fortunate to be able to recruit really good staff with those skills and to retain those staff. And it's not easy to work on Cape York. You've got remote distances. If you've got a young family, you're away a lot. Yeah, so a lot of travel. And there's an element of risk involved. The roads are pretty bad most of the year and really bad a lot of it. So, yeah, those sorts of things.
Bob Fraser, founding CEO of Cape York Natural Resource Management, who retired in April 2018 after 8 years in the role. You're listening to this bonus episode of My Cape York Life, the story of our founding CEO, Bob Fraser. Cape York is a challenging environment to live and work in, and there are many challenges for regional organisations.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you think you've had to manage and deal with in the time that you've been with Cape York NRM?
I think the very early days, so prior to Cape York NRM being set up, there are three major organisations on Cape York, and only one of them actually located on Cape York, that received the funding that was allocated on a regional basis to Cape York. So the early days was actually looking at the whole situation. Now, the steering committee really clearly identified that the way that the delivery was being done wasn't building capacity on Cape York, and it wasn't creating an economic return for the people on Cape York. So the first couple of years to actually move that model from where these groups had major funding and went and did the work through to building a capacity of a land trust or a ranger group or a grazing family or whatever to actually deliver, and taking that funding from a major organisation and actually spreading it out on the ground, there was a lot of resistance to that. That was probably the biggest challenge. I think at the end of the first 12 months it was probably one of the most rewarding things. Rod Griffith and Sandy worked actually for the first 5 years, worked with me very closely on a resilience model of delivery for NRM. They took a model that they developed in and run in the Murray area, the Redwood country in Murray, and we were trying to adapt that to Cape York. At the end of the first 12 months, Rod ran a session with the directors up at SACIA, and at that point in time, not all of the directors were contributing heavily. Everyone was contributing, but there were some that, you know, kind of their contribution was outside the board meetings and whatever. He posed a question to them. So, okay, now 12 months down the track, we're getting funding. What's the legacy of this board? That was his question. And the directors, there were 10 directors, every one of them actually made a fabulous contribution to that discussion. And so out of that come a legacy document that we're still using today. Says this is what that original board saw as what they wanted to achieve, the legacy that they wanted to leave. And that's been very interesting. All our new directors, we give that to them as an example of what the first initial directors. And there was a lot of risk for those first group of directors. They put their heads up above the parapet, as they say. They put their hands up to be directors. As I said, the previous attempts had failed because of politics and whatever. And they were willing to risk themselves to see if they could make this happen. And it was interesting because some of the directors on now came and said to me, look, they sat back and looked for a few years because they didn't think it would work. Yeah. And once they could see it would work, they put their hand up and now contributing.
That's really interesting, Bob, because I know that even when I started and I was talking to people as I was travelling through Cape York over the first couple of years, people on the ground in communities were saying the same thing. Oh, we're just sitting back. We'll just see how things go. And 2 years later, they're our project partners.
Yeah. And that is challenging because in that same time, the level of our funding has dropped, but the expectations of community have increased. So, you know, we're now managing expectations where originally we're out there trying to actually bring people in and work with them. And now, it's quite different. But I think one of the key things is with that level of support we have now, we look at our NRM planning that was undertaken. We look at the level of input into our regional investment strategy review every year. And even though they're not getting funding from us, they're there. Mm. So the relationship for many of those is not funding dependent.
Which leads me to a question of, in the almost 8 years you've been with Cape York NRM, what are you most proud of? And what do you feel is maybe your legacy that you're leaving as you retire?
I think a good, solid organisation that I have no concerns about moving ahead in the future. It's time I moved on. Someone new with a new approach, and there's a great board of directors that are actually going to work with the new person, and make sure that legacy continues and give that direction. But it's really, the board has never interfered with the actual delivery, been very conscious to make sure that the original steering committee's approach is carried as far as possible, you know, the delivery through partnerships, those sorts of things, and overseeing the organisation. I think very solid and strong, and I'm quite confident. Another thing is too, we took on a quite a big thing with the three regional bodies in Far North Queensland, Terrain, Northern Gulf and Cape York, actually establishing the NQNRM Alliance, but setting up Corporate Nature as a way of actually cost-effective delivery of those corporate services to all three organisations. That's in the early days now, but I believe that as it grows and develops and they iron out some of the little speed bumps here and there, it will really put more money on the ground. It'll release more money from administration and from those tasks, bulk purchasing and all these sorts of things. And I think expertise as well. You know, a small organisation like Cape York NRM couldn't have anyone with a strong HR background or a strong finance background. We couldn't employ specialists. We're looking for the all-round person, and you don't always get everything from them. In some instances, we had to purchase services from outside. Now, with the Corporate Nature providing those services across the three regions, we have the actual capacity to have those people in place to professionalise our corporate services and support.
So that's a pretty strong legacy. You've left behind a really solid organisation that's moved forward, it's grown, is still delivering on the Cape, in partnership with people on Cape York. And we've looked at how we can reduce our organisational expenses through establishing this other organisation. So that's a pretty good legacy, Bob, to leave behind.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm proud of it, but I'm very happy with the way it has developed. And as I said, there was a risk in taking it on in the first place. It may not have worked out, but it has. And it's really that the inaugural board, they were key to that, putting in the effort, quite often going to meetings with me and endorsing the approach we were taking, and then referring back to the engagement that that steering committee did across the Cape. Yeah, it's been a real team effort, and it always has been from day one.
So, Bob, you came for 2 years and you're leaving after eight. Is
that
right?
He gave me a three-year contract.
Oh, it was three years.
Year contract. Yeah. And 5 years later, after that contract ended, I'm still here.
So what made you stay for such a long time?
The people. Yeah. That's both inside the organisation, whether it be board or staff, and people on Cape York. And the actual NRM region's arrangements in Queensland. We're not on our own. We're not sitting up on Cape York on our own. Everyone has challenges, share ideas. Four CEOs meetings a year where the CEOs from the 14 regional bodies get together. The chairs meet regularly, share ideas and stories. So there's a whole team involved. There's a heck of a lot of people involved. And it's those people that's actually kept me in this role. Yeah, and I think, you know, it made it work.
So what's next for you? What happens next Thursday? What does Bob do next?
Well, I had this idea that probably the best if I took about 6 months and just actually really made myself active. And Vanilla, I love travelling as well as camping. So basically we've got a six-month next 6 months planned out to actually get out and about, travel, and really make that break from work life, and then sit down and think what comes after that.
I hear that you're leaving the country pretty much the minute you retire. Is that so we can't get a hold of you?
And I'm not going to have a mobile phone.
That's really not fair.
No, part of the thing is too, I made some absolutely fabulous friends amongst the staff and people in Cape York. Certainly I'll stay in touch, and I'll be sharing phone numbers and email addresses and things like that. But you got to be aware, anyone who actually takes that on, I'll be sending them photos of all the wonderful things I'll be doing for the next 6 months.
Oh, okay. Maybe we don't want to hear from you after all, Bob.
Yeah. No, we head off on the 4th of May, and going to be home for Christmas and then head off again in January. And after that, just don't have actually any plans. We're just going to see what happens.
As you're walking out the door, what are the things that you're thinking about the future of? You're not thinking about the future of Cape York and Arum because you're worrying about catching your plane. But if you happen to have been thinking about the future of Cape York and natural resource management and industry and culture and all of those things, what would you like to see? What are the things, what does the future of Cape York look like in an ideal world for you?
I think harmony is the very first thing. Somehow to bring about collaboration and goodwill between organisations on Cape York. There's some fabulous examples of real collaboration and real cooperation on the Cape, whether it be between local governments or between graziers and the traditional owners of that country who have native title over the country. And on the other side of the coin, there's organisations that don't get on, and yet there's common goals. You know, they've got a lot in common, and I think it just needs someone to sit down with them and say, do that exercise. So, you know, you're trying to achieve this, this and this. You might be trying to achieve something different. You might be, the other side might be trying to achieve something, but here's your common goals. Why can't you work together to achieve them? Yeah, I think that has to happen at some stage on Cape York. And if that happens, that'll be a fabulous foundation for moving ahead. You know, the economy on Cape York is held back by changing policy, by a whole heap of things, and conflicts between what people would like to see happen. The economy in Cape York is really a basket case, unfortunately, and it needs collaboration, cooperation to actually lift that out. You know, we've got some beautiful country that's been now handed over to traditional owners, which is absolutely fabulous as Aboriginal freehold land. And they have aspirations to set up operations and economic return from that country. And it needs policy by federal and state government to actually support that, to make that happen, to give people employment and create an economy for that country. Mm. At the moment, there's not even the money to look after it properly and to get people back out on country and look after the cultural and environmental values of it.
Well, thank you, Bob. Do you have any final words, any other thoughts that you'd like to leave, any stories you'd like to tell before we finish off today?
Stories, without naming anyone, eh?
Oh, you can name people. We didn't say you couldn't name people.
No. No, I've seen a lot of really interesting things in that 8 years on the Cape. I've seen instances where people have really got frustrated. You know, I've been up there working with ranger groups on the Cape who might be hosted by a local government, and then still have obligations to their own country and to their whether it be a land trust or prescribed body corporate or whatever, and those people aren't sitting down together. I guess that comes back to what I said before about, you know, everyone's got these common goals, but working together. So I've seen those frustrations boil over, and it's been quite challenging to see that. It doesn't bring out the best in people. Yeah, things like that. I've seen some really interesting sessions in our board meetings. Yeah. Where people have actually been quite open about their feelings about different approaches to things, but it's always been resolved in the end. People are actually sitting around there because they've got a common goal, yeah. and they're there for the benefit of the organisation, and it's been resolved, and that level of respect. And I think sometimes out on the community there's not always that level of respect for other people's opinions and ideas. But, it's been a really interesting time. And I've seen some beautiful country.
Yep.
Now, it's been a real privilege.
Do you have a favourite? Hard to have a favourite. Lots of favourites.
I think probably Fruit Bat Falls.
Oh,
yeah, because it's been a kind of a place where every time I go past, I can't go past it, to call in there.
Yep.
But all of the communities are actually fabulous. There's the settings of those, you know, those communities, absolutely fabulous. They have some challenges, but great. So probably Fruit Bat Falls is the one place I wouldn't drive past. But we went down to Wuthany for that area. You know, we flew over the Holroyd Plains, things like that. You know, spectacular country, beaches. Yeah.
Stunning.
Yeah. You can't capture those places in a photo. You know, they look fabulous, but really, you know, the essence of them, you can't be captured.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. Mm. Well, Bob, next Friday we're having a little celebration to send you off with some people who've known you for a while and some people who've only just gotten to know you. And I think I can speak for all of us and everyone who's known you throughout your career, because we know how hard you work. A wonderful retirement and a well-deserved retirement. Couldn't happen to a nicer bloke.
Thank you.
And we also wish Vanelle all the very best in getting to have her husband back after all of these years and all the travel and all the work that you've done. So we're certainly going to miss you, but we wish you the very best, and we know that it's not goodbye.
Thank you. You know, to be honest, I won't miss you, but you're in my heart. The staff, the people in Cape York, always be there. I'll be thinking of the Cape and the people. And I'm really confident. I meant that. I'm really confident that the organisation will step up to the next level. And, I guess it's up to the board to make sure they recruit a great person to follow on.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Bob Fraser, Cape York NRM's first CEO, who retired in April 2018. Bob leaves the role with the best wishes of all the Cape York NRM team and of so many people around Cape York Peninsula and the country.
Whoa, it's a damn big island. You follow us, follow the sound.
My Cape York Life is a podcast brought to you by Cape York NRM and the Australian Government's National Landcare Program. All of our previous episodes are available on our website, landmanager.capeyorknrm.com.au, or by searching My Cape York Life on your favourite podcast app. I'm Lyndall Scoble. Thank you for listening to My Cape York Life.
I tell you my little home.